Today's shir in Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Chav Hei. We will begin on Daf Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, 14 lines from the bottom. At the end of the previous shir, we were discussing the halacha that we know everybody agrees that a bechor is only entitled to pishnayim in what was muchzik, what the father had when he passed away, not what was roy. However, in the previous shir, we learned that there's a fundamental machloikus between Rebbe and the Chachomim in the application of this halacha. And Rebbe, we could describe as being much more pro-Bechor. And Rebbe's opinion is that many more situations are included in the category of muchzik than according to the Rabbonim. And the subject that we discussed at the end of the previous shir was, how do we look at a milvah? If money was owed to the father when he passed away, and now that money is going to be collected after his ptira, is that considered royu muchzik? So Gemara says, Sholch Matam, a message, a halacha was sent from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, just for information. The Gemara, sometimes when it describes that a din was being sent from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, uses the word Sholch Mimarova, Marova meaning Eretz Yisrael. And sometimes the Gemara uses the word Sholch Mitam, they sent from there, which means from Eretz Yisrael. And the Farshim discuss when does the Gemara use the word Mitam, and when does the Gemara use the word Mimarova. It's a very nice pshat, that we know that there were times where the relationship between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, the relationship between the countries, was a strained relationship. Because Bavel was under the control of the Greeks, and Eretz Yisrael was under the control of the Romans. So when things were in a strained state, the Gemara uses the word Sholch Mitam, that messages were sent surreptitiously, quietly. In a time when the relationship between the countries was better, the Gemara says, Sholchem Marov. So the Gemara says, Sholchem Itam, they sent from Eretz Yisrael the following halacha. Bechor noitel pishnayim b'milva. If the father passed away and there were accounts receivable, the Bechor is entitled to pishnayim in the base amount owed of a loy b'ribis, not in the ribis. As we described in the previous year, we know that ribis is osur. So how could there be a situation that he's entitled to get it from the ribbis? And we discussed that there were two ways that the Rishonim explain it. Either it's a loan that's owed to the father from a goy, where ribbis is allowed to be collected, or our Gemara is referring to a situation of a vak ribbis, which is obviously osur, but is acceptable to be collected. Ask the Gemara Laman, according to whom did they send this din? Elaim Rabbanon, if we're going to suggest that this is the position of the Rabbanon, hash to shivcha the isi b'rishusay. If there's shvach of something that is there, something is in the rishus of the nifter as he passes away, and it just accrues in value. Amri Rabbanon, deloy shakel, still the Rabbanon, with their limited definition and their limited rights that they give to the Bechor, said that the Bechor would not be entitled to Pishnayim, Milva Miboy, where this money isn't in the father's possession at all. So how could this opinion be going according to the Rabbanim? Ella, the Rebbe. It must be going according to Rebbe. Ask the Gemara, or the Rebbe, Beribis Loi. According to Rebbe, who gives the Bechor, as we said earlier, so much more rights. And according to Rebbe, the Bechor certainly gets Pishnayim in a milva. So would Rebbe not say that he also gets Pishnayim in the ribbis? For Tanya, doesn't the Brice explicitly say that according to Rebbe, Bechor noitel Pishnayim beim milva beim ribbis, that the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim both in the milva and the ribbis? So when they sent this message that he's only entitled to Pishnayim in the milva and not in the ribbis, it can't be following the opinion of Rebbe. Machloikus Rishonim, where our Brice is clearly teaching us that according to Rebbe, he's entitled to Pishnayim, both in the milva and in the ribbis, which ribbis are we speaking about? Is it only the amount of interest that was due to the father at the time that he passed away, but any ribbis that accrues after the father passes away, Rebbe will agree that certainly falls into the category of roi, and the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim? Or is Rebbe going to hold that ribbis travels together with the actual halva, and therefore, if according to Rebbe, the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim in the milva, is also entitled to Pishnayim in the ribbis? So we're back to where we started. The Marava, we started our shiur today with them sending a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel that the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim, and we don't know in what, answers the Gemara. According to whom that was being said, answers the Gemara, it is following the opinion of the Rabbanon. I, if it's following the opinion of the Rabbanon, ask the Gemara, it's obvious, why did we need them to send a special message? Answers the Gemara, or Milva, command the Gav Yadami. The Chiddush is that we would think that perhaps that alone, an account that he has, particularly as we discussed in the previous year, perhaps even has a shtar indicating that the money is owed to the father, should be considered like, even according to Rabbanim, muksik, it's like cash. Kamash Malan, since it isn't cash at hand, it's not considered muksik according to Rabbanim, it's only considered roi. It's interesting to point out that the Rashbam says that there are mefarshim that want to distinguish between money owed by a Jew versus money owed by a goy. And even in that shot, I saw two different approaches how to understand. Some say that money owed by a Jew should perhaps be considered, even according to the Rabbanan, as good as paid, because it's a Jew who's certainly going to pay his debt. By a goy, we have to be concerned that he won't. I saw another pshat that says just the opposite, that perhaps by a goy, we could assume that the money is going to be paid, not by a Jew. And the Rashbam uses very strong word. He says, hevel b'fiyem, what they're saying is foolish. There is no place in the Gemara to make such a distinction between who owes the money, and therefore, according to the Rebbe, the halach is the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim in the Milva, and according to our last price, even in the Ribbis, and according to Rabbanan, the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim. Says the Gemara, Amalei Rav Acha Barav Lervina, Ikla Meimel Asrin, a Meimel came to our city, Vidarish, and he said the following halacha. He said, Bechor Noitel Pishnayim B'Milva, that a Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim in the Milva, Avaloi Beribis, but not in the Ribis payment. Amalei, so when Rav Acha heard this statement, he said, Nahadoi Latamayu, a Mamer who's paskening this way is consistent with the position of another member of the city, of another person who's from Nahadoi, Rav Nachman. Dama Rava. Rava, in saying, Rava says that if the father left over receivables, we have to look at how those receivables are being paid. And Govu Karka, if the receivables are being paid, the loiva is paying the estate with karka, with property, then the halacha is yeshloi. The halacha is that the Bechor will be entitled to Pishnayim. However, Govah Mos, if that receivable is being paid in cash, Eloi, he's not entitled to Pishnayim. Why? So the Rishonim explained, in understanding Rava's position, that since on Karka, as we know, that as soon as a Halva is made, typically, there's immediately a Shibud, there's immediately a lien on the Karka, so that makes like the karka, and then the karka is actually used to pay. So it means that it was muksik. But there is no lien on cash. There is no lien on mas. And therefore, if the loiva paid up the loan with mas, the Bechor would not be entitled to Pishnayim. Rav Nachman Amar. Rav Nachman is of the opposite opinion. Govamos Yeshloy, that if the loan is paid up in cash, that's when the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim. Gov Karka, but it's paid up in Karka, then he will not be entitled to Pishnayim. And as Machloikas, we showed him in how to understand Rav Nachman's opinion. Rashbam's explanation of Rav Nachman's opinion is that since the father lent cash to the loiva, so he's getting back what he lent. He lent cash, he's getting back cash, and that's why it's considered muchzik. Even though it's obviously a difficult concept to understand, as the Rishonim questioned the Rashbam, because we know there's a rule throughout Shas, milva leitzav nitna. So it's not the money that I lent that I'm getting back. So how could we say, how could the Rashbam say the father lent money and he's getting back money? It's not the same money. And that's why Tosfos has a different approach to the Gemara. Tosfos' approach is that since in most circumstances, if a loan is made in cash, it's going to be repaid in cash, because a loiva typically will not want to give up his property, his real estate, if he can repay with cash. And truthfully, the Malva also probably wants cash back, because that's what he lent and that's what he wants back. So since it's more matsui, it's more common that it should be paid back in cash, that's why cash payment is considered muchsuk, where a bechor should get pishnayim, versus a karka payment, which will not be considered muchsuk, that the bechor should get pishnayim. So the way the Rashbam, and most Rishonim explain the Gemara, is what Rav Acha was saying, is that a Meimer will agree with Rav Nachman, and that a Meimer will say that a Bechor is entitled to a Pishnayim payment by a Milva, when? If the payment is in cash. Like Rav Nachman and a Meimer are both agreeing, because both of them are members of the city of Nahadah. However, the Rashbam and other Rishonim say another pshat, that even though the Gemara is saying, that's how this piece of Gemara began, that a Meimer and Rav Nachman are in agreement, they're not in total agreement. Because whereas Rav Nachman says that the Bechor is only entitled to Pishnayim payment if the payment is made in cash, a Meimer's opinion will be that a Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim whether the payment was made in cash, in Moss, or whether the payment was made in Karka. So the Rishonim asked the obvious question. Rav Nachman's opinion is that if the payment is made in cash, in Karka, the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim. But don't we know that there's a concept of Shibud Daraisa? And we've discussed this concept, Baruch Hashem, so many times, which creates a lien on all of the real estate of the loiva. So how can we ignore that shibud? So the way most Rishonim learn the Gemara is that our Gemara is following the opinion, at least at this point, that shibud alav d'raisa. And therefore the concept of shibud is not strong enough to make it muchzik, because shibud is not midaraisa. Ask the Mefarshim, fine. Our Gemara is following the opinion that the shibud is not midaraisa, but shibud is midrabanan. So how do we ignore that? There's a shibud at least midrabanan. So I saw a number of ways how to explain it. Actually, three very nice pshatim. One pshat is that what does shibud rabanan say? That if what is a nafkamina? Say it a little stronger. What is a nafkamina if we learn shibud daraisa or we learn shibud rabanan? The nafkamina is not just a nafkamina. Is it a concept midrabanan? Is it a concept midaraisa? It's much deeper. If we say shibud daraisa, the moment the loan takes place, at that moment, all of the loiva's real estate becomes meshubed to that loan. Whereas if we learn shibud derabanan, yes, there's a shibud derabanan. But when does the shibud derabanan begin? Only when the loan is due. Until the loan is actually due, there is no shibud. And therefore, here we'll be referring to a situation where the loan isn't due yet. So we can't rely on the shibud, on the karka, to say that it should be like it's by the father, because there was no shibud until the loan is due. one pshat. Another pshat, going back to a concept that we've discussed many times. If we say that the concept of Shibud is only with Rabbanan, how could Rabbanan create such a concept? As we've learned many times, Hefker Bezdin Hefker, which gives the Rabbanan very strong authority. But even if we learn Hefker Bezdin Hefker, we've learned what is the concept of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Certainly the Rabbanan and Hefker Bezdin Hefker could say that something that's yours, we're being mafker it. But as we discussed many times, that Hefker Bezdin Hefker, according to many opinions, cannot say that something that's yours not only is no longer yours, but it's mine. That Hefker Bezdin Hefker can't do. So now it's very geschmack. Yes, we'll say Shibud HaDerabbanan. And what does Shibud HaDerabbanan say? That if you're my loiva and you owe me money, Hefker Bezdin Hefker could say that this property is not yours. But it can't make it mine. Here we want to make it the father's, that the Bechor should be entitled to Pishnayim. Hefker Bezdin Hefker doesn't have that ability. A third pshat. I saw from Avni Nezer. Interesting question that's posed by the Avni Nezer, which actually comes up almost every day. We're discussing Shibud HaDerabbanan, Shibud HaDeraisa, means what happens by a loan if nothing was said. Shibud HaDeraisa says there's a Shibud automatically with Deraisa. Shibud HaDerabbanan says there's a Shibud automatically with Rabbanan. But the truth is that most loans that take place, we don't have to rely on that. Both, if I go to the bank and I borrow money, if they'll lend me the money, they're certainly going to require that I put up collateral, that I put up a house, a property for collateral. And there's nothing hidden here. It's all open. So here, what will be the din, asked Avni Nezer, when a malva and a loiva agree to enter into a shibud? I sign a loan document, and I agree that I'm putting up my house as the mortgage, as the collateral. What is the din? Suggest to Avni Nezer, I did it with my eyes wide open, everything was open on the table. Suggest to Avni Nezer that still under such circumstances, the halacha would be that the shibud is not chal. Why? He says, we don't have the, if we hold the shibuda, lav deraisa, shibud's only the rabbanan, we don't have the ability to create shibudim that don't have a makar, that don't have a source in the Torah. So we're learning shibudim lav deraisa. It means exactly that shibud rabbanan only can make an obligation, but only that far. Because to say that shibud rabbanan should create a lien as if it belongs to the malva is no different than when the malva and the loiva agreed to enter into a shibud relationship. But if there is no makar, there is no source in the Torah for such a shibud, we can't create it just because we agree to it. And that will be the situation here, and we hold shibud as the rabbanan. Amle Abaye l'Rava. So Abaye says to Rava, your opinion that you're saying that if the payment is made in karka, then the bechor is entitled to pishnayim. If it's made in cash, he's not. Kasha is a difficult opinion to understand. I have two kashas actually. And Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman's opinion that says that if the payment is made in karka, the bechor is entitled to pishnayim, but if it's made in cash, he isn't, is also kasha. It's difficult to understand. And he explains what he says. L'didach kasha. Ma'ishtam ma'astaloi. Why are you saying that if the payment was made in kish, then the bechor is not entitled to pay shnayim? Lav ha'nemos shavakavuan. This is not the money that the father left. As I said earlier, mivla tzadnetnu. So when the loiva is giving back money to the estate, he's not giving back the same money that he received from the father. And that's why that money can't be considered muhsik, that the bechor should be entitled to pay shnayim. But if we take that argument, says Abaye Trava, Karka Nami Lav Hai Karka Shavakavuan. The father lent money to the loiva. He's getting back Karka. So it's not what he left. So how can we suggest that if he's getting back Karka, it should be considered Muksa? Further, Void, Ms. Atud Amrit, Ms. Tabra Tamad B'nei Rava, the Kodam Safta V'zavna Zvina Zvini, which means as follows. We're going to spend time in Ahmed Beis, beginning on the bottom line of this Ahmed, speaking about the famous case of the Safta. We can already introduce the case. The case was as follows. There was a person who made the following condition. He says that my Yerusha should go to my grandmother. My money, my estate should go to my grandmother, even though he had a daughter. And the daughter is his Yerush. The money should go to my grandmother. But after my grandmother passes away, the money shouldn't go to her Yerushim. It should go to my Yerush, to my daughter. The question that we will discuss at Amud Beis and Mitzvah Shem is that's what happened was the person passed away. The grandmother took the money. And now the grandmother passed away. But before the grandmother passed away, this person's daughter passed away. And the daughter's husband said that I should be the Yerush. So the question is he entitled to that Yerusha or not? We'll discuss what the issues are more on the base. But the Gemara clearly will teach us that if the grandmother had gone and sold that property before she died, it's not the right thing to do. We're going to learn. Somebody who gives her advice to do such a thing is a Rasha, but she did it. The sale would be a sale. So here too, how could you say, asks Abaye to Rava, that the fact that the loiva will pay this karka to the malva means that it belonged to the malva? Doesn't the loiva have a right to sell it? So shouldn't the fact that he has a right to sell it prove that it's not the malva's, not the father's, not the estate's, that it's not muchzik? Asked Ritva an obvious question. If this safta went and sold the property, as wrong as it is to do, the sale is 100% perfect sale. What's the halacha, however, asked Ritva, if I owe you money? It's not due yet. It's not due for another 10 years. And I go and I sell I own a property. I go and I sell that property. And then the time to pay comes, and I don't have any money to pay you. What is your right? We've learned it a million times. You have a right to go back to all the properties that I sold. So how could the Gemara compare the two situations, as to Ritva? In the case of the Safta, the sale is a full sale. In the case of the Loiva, he could sell it, but it's a tenuous sale because the Malva, the father, the estate, could always take it away. So Ritva says a very interesting teretz. Mali afka gdoila, mali afka ktana. He says, absolutely correct. The two situations are not exactly similar. But in the case where the safta sells, we could understand that since she sells it, that gives her ownership. Here, yes, the loiva strength in selling is weaker because he only could sell it, and the sale will only remain valid if he has the ability to pay back his debts otherwise. But since he has the ability to sell it, that ability, as strong or as weak as it is, should make that the ownership of the karka that the loiva has should not be considered muchzik by the malva, by the father, by his estate. That's the difficulty with Rav's pshat. Then he continues saying, Rav Nachman Kasha. Rav Nachman's pshat is also difficult. Maishta karka deloi. Why are you saying that if the loiva pays karka, there the b'chor will not be entitled to pishnayim? The lav ha karka shava kavun. As we just said, the karka is not, the father didn't leave them the karka, the father never lent karka, he wasn't necessarily supposed to get back this karka. Mas nami, lafhani mas shavik, as we say, mivlat sonitna, and the money he lent is not the money they got back. One problem. And another question, v'oy hamar av nachman amar abavua, yusaymim shigova karka b'chayvus avir, if yusaymim do collect karka, money that the father owed, b'chayv, so we see there's a very strong shibud on all of this. That means, if money is owed to father, but the father not only had accounts receivable, he also had accounts payable, the karka that they get will go on to the people that the father owes money. So we see that there is a shibud on the karka. What are you saying that there isn't? So now, where we're up to is, we have Rav Nachman and Ravis, the two kashas in each one of these opinions. Rava responds, and he responds not only in his own behalf, but he also responds on behalf of Rav Nachman. Loyla the Dikasha, Veloyla Rav Nachman Kasha. Tama the B'nai Merava Kaminilan. We're only explaining the opinion of the B'nai Merava. V'lon loy sfirulon. We don't agree with the B'nai Marava, which means as follows. Let's review everything we've learned for the last 2 days. The B'nai Marava are the ones that taught us a very bechidish. That the Rabbanon, that according to Rabbanon, you are entitled to pishnayim in Havo, by Milva. The question is, what, when, where? So Rav Nachman and Rava start explaining the B'nai Marava's opinion. But we hold like Shmuel, say Rav Nachman and Rava. Shmuel's opinion is that it makes no difference. You're never entitled to pishnayim by a milva. Since you're never entitled to pishnayim by a milva, it doesn't make a difference. Karak or mos, he won't get anything. So therefore, we're not hard to understand. So the Mefarshim ask the obvious question. Rashbam, Tosfos, Rimigash, all the Rishonim ask the obvious question. Fine. They've successfully defended themselves. But we need to understand the opinion of the B'nai Marava. They're explaining the B'nai Marava. That the B'nai Marava, according to Rava, only if they got paid in cash. According to Rav Nachman, only if they got paid in... Just opposite. According to Rav Nachman... Yeah, no, I'm learning right. According to Rav Nachman, according to Rava, only if they got paid in karka. According to Rava, only if... According to Rav Nachman, only if they got paid in cash. So how do we understand after asking all these questions? So, the Rimagash has a very easy way of learning the Gemara, even though it doesn't seem to be saying the words of the Gemara. What they say is that Rav Nachman and Rava were saying, all of your questions only begin because you hold like, that we're going to hold like the Chachamim. If we hold like Rebbe, that we've been learning already, who has a very broad power, gives the Bechar a lot of power, all these questions wouldn't be a problem. We hold like Rebbe. It's not Pash Peshat in the Gemara. Rashbam explains as follows. We need to understand Rav Nachman's opinion. We need to understand Rava's opinion. He explains Rava's opinion as following. That Rava's opinion is based, our question is based on Shibud Lav Daraisa. What he's answering is that Shibud is Daraisa. And therefore, if Shibud is Daraisa, we could understand why by Karka he's entitled to Pishnayim, but there is no Shibud Amos. That's how Rava's opinion is defended. How is Rav Nachman's opinion defended? He says, Mos, he's going to say, since it's the Mos that he gave, it's the same Mos that he gets back. Going back to what he said before, especially since Mos is usually paid. Karka, we ask the Kasha. Not we, the Gemara asked the Kasha. I asked the Kasha. If you hold, there's no Shibud on Karka, why is the Halacha that if the Yisoyim received Karka for debts that were due to their father, they have to give that Karka to the people that the father owed money? It has nothing to do with Shibud. And that's why you can't consider Karka as if it was in the position of the father. It's a whole new halacha. What's the halacha? Shibud Rav Nosson. Which we know is a special dinner. Shibud Rav Nosson. That's why, which Shibud Rav Nosson always says, if A owes B and B owes C, A owes C, that's what happened over here. It's not that the Yisoyim got it and the Yisoyim have a Shibud. It's a whole new dinner. Shibud Rav Nosson. Before we complete this part of the sugya, it's worth discussing a very important shaila. Probably the most common shaila that comes up in Pishnayim by Bechor. A father passes away and he has money in the bank. Is that considered Roy or Muchsuk? He doesn't have the money at hand. Is that considered Roy or Muchsuk? The Paiskim discussed this question. The Guinness for Adam, the Shalosh Shuvos Guinness for Adam, wants to bring a raya from Gemara that we learned the other day. We learned in a braisa that if the father, the braisa said if the father left over matnas kahuna, the son, the bechor is entitled to pishnayim. Ask the Gemara, Maman of Shok, if the father had the matnas kahuna at hand, obviously the bechor is entitled to pishnayim. If he didn't, why is he entitled to pishnayim? So the Gemara answered, Makira kahuna. How do we understand Makira kahuna? Makira kahuna means that the father was a kohen, who was the one that always received these matnas kahuna from the Yisrael. So even though in this situation the father didn't physically get those matnas kahuna, because he passed away before the Yisrael could give it to him, the fact that he always got it, the halacha considers as if it's his. Says the Guinness for Adam, it should be the same by money in the bank. Money in the bank, certainly says the Guinness for Adam, is no less than Makira kahuna. And if the fact that I, the Kohen, am always the one that gets this matnas kahuna, that the the halacha considers it as if it's mine already, even though I never got it. Certainly money in the bank, that I could go into the bank and take out my money, should be considered mine, muchzik, and the b'chor should get pishnayim. Even though I saw Rav Avadya Yosef disputes what the Guinness for Adam says. I think the Guinness for Adam himself says it. He says you can't compare Makiri Kahuna, especially the way we learned Makiri Kahuna, to money in the bank. Makiri Kahuna, when we explained that Gemara, we said what it creates is that all the other Kahanim are Masiach Das. They have no hope for this Matnas Kahuna. Money in the bank, let's say there are a number of customers, number of people have deposits in the bank, and the bank doesn't have enough cash. So the bank is not going to make a decision who's going to get his money and who's not going to get his money today. So you can't compare. There is no Masiach Das by the other depositors. And therefore, you can't compare the two situations. Rav Vosner discusses the question. He actually has an Etzisraldiger perspective to it. He says, because you know, when you put money in the bank, and a fundamental part of this question is, when you put money in the bank, it's not just sitting there that my money is there. The bank lends the money further. And when you go, you don't get back the same money. It's not the same moss that I gave that I get back. That's the fundamental part of the question. But Rav Vosner says, you know, if you lend money to a bank that's owed by Jews, you have to have a heteriska. What's a heteriska? A heteriska is that half is how we learned the Masech Bamitzia, half is halvah, half is pikad. So he says at first glance, he would say, that when I leave money at a Jewish bank that I wrote a heteriska, the money that's there as a pikad is mine. And I should be muchzik in it. And the b'chor should get pishnayim. The money, the half that's there for halvah, if we're passing like the chachamim, and according to the chachamim, you don't get pishnayim in halvah, the b'chor should not get pishnayim in that half. But then he goes on and says, perhaps not. He says, you can't compare the b'kodin of the shetar iska to a regular case of b'kodin. What is the regular case of b'kodin? The regular case of b'kodin is that I have, let's say, a silver menorah. I'm going away. I don't want to leave it at home. So I leave it by you, my neighbor. I come home, I pick up my menorah. Here, this is a pikadon, but it's not a pikadon that the bank is holding as it is. We know that the bank is going to use that pikadon to lend money or invest or whatever the bank does. And therefore, even if there's a heteriska, which says that half the money is a pikadon, it's not a regular case of pikadon. And therefore, Rav Vosner and Rav Avadya Yosef, both paskin, the money in the bank is not considered muchzik, and a b'chor is not entitled to pishnayim in that money. Rav Moshe Sternbuch makes the following distinction. He says, it depends what kind of bank account you have. He says, if it's a checking account or a savings account, then whenever you come in, you could get your money, that's going to be considered muchzik. But if it's like a CD that has a term, and you can with a penalty, but really it's not due before its expiration date, that will not be considered muchzik. He also says a very interesting thing, obviously if it's done in a legal way. So let's say there's a person who can't keep money in the bank on his own name. So he asked somebody else to put the money on his name. The father didn't have money on his own name. He had the main money on somebody else's name. That money certainly will not be considered muchzik. Since we require this person who the money is registered on his name to go collect the money, so there's an extra step involved to get hold of the money, you can't consider that money muchzik to the father's estate. It's only roi, and the b'chor will not get pishnayim. So we refer to the case of Safta. So Gemara wants to know my Safta. The Huda Amalo, there was a person that said, Nichsei l'Safta, I want, and this person was concerned that he's about to pass away, that all of his estate, all of his assets should go to his grandmother. Here Safta means a grandmother, not an older woman like it means many places in Shas. And afterwards, it should not go to my grandmother's Yarshim, it should go to my Yarshim. Who were his Yarshim? Havle Barta. He had a daughter, Davina Siva, that was married. He had a married daughter when he made this statement. But this married daughter, Shchiva B'chai Bala B'chai Safta, predeceased her grandmother and her husband. Bas the Shchiva Safta, not a grandmother passes away, and who is going to get this woman's money? who is entitled to that Yerusha? Osabal, Kotava, the husband came and said, it should go to me. Omrav Huna, Liyarsi, Vafilo Yarsi Yarsi. The halacha is, according to Rav Huna, it's going to go to the husband. Rav Anan Amar, Liyarsi, V'loy Liyarsi Liyasoi. It won't go to the husband. Sholchum Itam, this question was sent to Eretz Yisrael, and the following message came back. Hilchos Kavasei, Rav Anan, the halacha is like Rav Anan, however, v'loy mitameh, but not following his reasoning. And we'll explain it right now. Hechasei kavasei de Rav Anan, the halacha is indeed like Rav Anan, the baal lo yoris, that if the granddaughter predeceased the grandmother, and now this money becomes available, the money will not go to her husband. However, v'loy mitameh, not following Rav Anan's reasoning. The real Rav Anan sover, Rav Anan is of the opinion, Avgav the Havle brought Labarte, Lyoris, Lyoris. Which means as follows. Rav Anan's reasoning, says the Gemara, says Rav Anan himself, is that when this person made this declaration, my money should go to my grandmother, and when my grandmother dies, it should go to my daughter, he meant specifically my daughter. And therefore, if my daughter is not here, so then the money should stay by my grandmother. And when my grandmother passes away, her Yashim should take the money. And therefore, it's very understandable why it shouldn't go to the husband. It shouldn't go to any Yashim of the daughter. Because what he meant was that the one should get the money is his daughter. And if his daughter is no longer, unfortunately, alive to receive that money, so then all of his instructions become null and void. But that isn't the reason, says the Gemara. Because, says the Gemara, V'loyi, the halacha actually is, Dila Havle Bro Labarte, if the daughter had left over Yarshim. But we have to be very specific when we identify who we mean when we're speaking about the Yarshim of the daughter. We mean the daughter's children. There, the halacha is Vada Yaris. Then they would be the Yarshim. When the man made the declaration, let's go back to the beginning of the story. When the man made the declaration that he wants this money to go to his daughter, he didn't mean specifically his daughter. He hoped that his daughter would be alive. But if his daughter, unfortunately, would no longer be alive, he meant his daughter's Yarshim. But who do his daughter's Yarshim mean? His daughter's children. And the Rishonim make 2 points. They make more than 2 points. 2 points that we're going to repeat. One is he meant the daughter's Yarshim. Even if those daughters' Yarshim were not in the world when this man made the declaration. Meaning, the man made a declaration, my grandmother should take my assets. When my grandmother dies, my daughter should take it. When he made this statement, the daughter did not have any children. It doesn't make a difference. What he meant was not dafka my daughter. He meant my daughter and her children and her grandchildren, her sons or her daughters, it all doesn't make a difference. Even if they weren't yet born. That's one hand, the Rishonim say. On the other hand, we know the halacha is that Yarshim, the first line of succession, as we've discussed so many times in this parak, are children. Sons, sons' children, then daughters, then the daughter's children. But let's say somebody, Rechman Slan, is nifter, without any children, then who are his Yarshim? His parents, his father, her father, siblings, that he didn't mean. The Rishonim say, what this man meant in making this declaration meant his daughter, and his daughter's descendants, not in any going downwards, not going sideways or upwards. However, what is the reason that the husband is not entitled to this Yerusha? Baal Hanatam de la Yaris, why doesn't the husband get the Yerusha? Mishum de Havale Roy, Venabal Noik of the Roy Kimuksik. The halacha is that a husband is a Yerush of the wife. But as we've learned previously, when is the husband the Yerush of the wife? The husband is the Yerush of the wife. That if the wife dies, and whatever asset she has ownership of at the moment of death, the husband yarshins. But what would be the halacha as we discussed? That let's say there's a couple married. and the wife predeceases the husband. And then, after the wife dies, her father dies. And she is a yorish of a father. Father didn't have sons, so she's a yorish of a father. That money the husband doesn't get, because that's already muchzik. That's money that the daughter didn't have when she passed away. This money, says the Gemara, the reason the halacha that the husband doesn't get it is not because the person who made the declaration, as Rav Anan suggested, didn't mean that the husband shouldn't get it. It wasn't because he didn't mean that the husband shouldn't get it. It wasn't because he meant that only my daughter should get it, no one else. He didn't mean that. And for Haraya, if the daughter would have left over children, he would have certainly agreed that the daughters, and that's the halacha that the daughter's children should get it. But there's a new problem. This money only becomes the daughter's after the daughter passed away. And that's muchzik money. And muchzik money your husband's not entitled to. Vein abal noita b'royik muchzik. Ask the Gemara, Rav Huna, who disagreed with Rav Anan. And Rav Huna's opinion is that if this would have indeed happened, where the man made this declaration, and if the daughter dies before the grandmother, when the grandmother dies, since the daughter's no longer alive, the husband gets it. What's Rav Huna going to do with the halacha that nobody disputes? We've learned already, and we're going to learn it tomorrow again, that a husband's only entitled to muchzik na roi. So why is the husband entitled to that money? It's only roi money, because the daughter only got that money after she died. Mechlad Rav Huna sover bal noel noitel b'roi ke b'muchzik. Amar v'loza, dovazeh niftach b'gdoilim v'nestayim b'ktanim. Which means as follows, the way Rajbam explains. Rav Huna said a psak. Rav Huna says Rav Elazar was so much greater than I am. He said a psak, but it's a psak that needs explanation, because we have this fundamental problem that it's roi, not muchzik, and how does the husband get it? So I, the ktanim, I who am lesser than Rav Huna, have the obligation and the responsibility to explain Rav Huna's psak. And he says as follows, kola oimer achrecha ka oimer ma'ach shadami. Whoever says achrecha, when the man, going back to the beginning of our Gemara, made this declaration that my money should go to my grandmother, and after my grandmother passes away, it should go to my daughter, it wasn't a hilchos yerusha. What he was saying is, I'm giving the money, and again, we will learn in the Mitzvah Shem, coming Shurim, how this could be worked together with the hilchos yerusha that we're learning. Is saying this is how I'm giving my money today. The money today is my grandmother's, and today it's my daughter's after my grandmother's. So when did the daughter receive the money? Today. And since the daughter received the money today, she's still alive. So even though she never maybe physically got hold of the money, since she never physically got hold of the money, because she died before the grandmother died, that doesn't mean it's if the halacha doesn't view it as muchzik. And that's why Rav Huna says that when the grandmother dies, that money will go to the daughter's, husband. However, says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Mestabra Tam D'Mnei Rava. What the Me'emar Rava said in explaining the psak, that we said that the psak is, Rav Anan's psak is correct, but not for his reasoning. And again, let's review what we learned. That according to the Bnei Marova, if the daughter died, the halacha is that if the daughter died before the husband, before her husband, and before her grandmother, when her grandmother dies, the husband will not get that money, because we only view that money as roi money, not muchzik money. And a husband's not entitled to yarshin, his wife's muchzik money. You know why he's right? Going back to what we learned in Anum Aleph. The kadam safta v'zavna zvina zvini. What is the argument Rav Huna, as at least the way Rav Elazar explains Rav Huna, is based on? That money is considered already the daughter's, not only after the grandmother dies, but at the moment that this man made the declaration. Says the Gemara, says Rava, how could we follow such a line of reasoning? If that were true, how could it then be that the grandmother is allowed to sell those nechassim, as we discussed on Amar Aleph, that if the grandmother wanted to, and she sold those properties, the sale would be 100% valid. if it's already considered muhsik by the daughter, to the degree that when she dies, if she dies before her husband, this husband still yashin, considered muhsik by her. So if I'm muhsik on a property, how could you sell that property? How could the grandmother sell the property without the daughter's consent? It must be because the daughter has no relationship to this property until the grandmother dies. And when the grandmother died, the daughter was already dead. And that's why it's only considered roy and not muhsik. And that's why the halacha is that if the daughter died before the grandmother and before her husband, that property would not revert to the husband. But if she did leave Yarshim, say the b'nei Marava, children, grandchildren, they would get the Yerusha from the grandmother.